This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. When we experience something traumatic, the focus is usually on getting ourselves through the event as quickly and safely as possible. And oftentimes, we may not realize that the trauma leaves a mark on our hearts, our minds, and bodies. And the work that we do after the immediate trauma is over is just as important as getting through the painful experience. My guest today, Collier Landry, has a unique understanding of trauma's long-term effects. The subject of an upcoming documentary series, Aftermath, Collier will share his personal story of navigating the aftermath of trauma and will share with us how he stays inspired and ready for anything in life. Collier, welcome to the show. Happy to have you with me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Erica. Happy to be here.
What an incredible, you know, obviously life that you've led and such inspiring things coming up in terms of shedding light on such an important subject matter. You know, I deal with people that have endured trauma every single day, and I know you've been on the front lines of that. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your personal story and why this was of interest to you?
Sure. I guess the real backstory is I grew up in a small town in Ohio with about 30,000 people. And I grew up in kind of a very strange home. My father was a doctor, but he was never really around. And he was sort of an abusive, well, he wasn't sort of, he was a very abusive guy. And so I grew up mostly with my mother, who, you know, my parents were married, but they had a rather kind of odd marriage. I was constantly with my mother. My father wasn't around a lot, you know, that type of thing. When he was, it was not a very pleasant situation. Mm-hmm. In June of 1989, my father had introduced me to his then girlfriend, which I didn't know was his girlfriend. I was 11 years old and didn't really understand how these things worked. But I saw him kiss this woman, and I told my mother, and my mother immediately, you know, called him up and filed for divorce. My mother had known about the affair, his many multiple other affairs, and but I never knew about them. And I ended up finding I had an arrangement where, you know, as long as he didn't involve me, everything was copacetic. But and he could just kind of do whatever he wanted. The divorce was really messy, and there was a lot of anger and a lot of things going back and forth. And it was a very strange time in my life because I didn't really understand what was going on. On December 30th, 1989, before I went to bed, I gave my mother a hug and a kiss good night, and I went to sleep, and I never saw my mother again. I woke up at about 3:18 in the morning on December 31st. I heard a couple of loud thuds, what I described during the trial as the body hitting a wall. And I was laying in bed, and I was terrified, and I didn't know what was happening. And I heard my father's footsteps slowly go down the hall, and he stopped in front of my room, and I could see out of my peripheral vision as I was laying there his footsteps in my doorway. And thank goodness I never looked up, because I don't think I would be here if I did. My mother, I woke up the next morning. My mother was gone. My father told me this whole story. My father's a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. He told me this whole story, how they got in a fight, and my mother left and took her credit cards and all this, you know, mishigas and BS. Mm-hmm. And basically, I didn't believe a word he said. I called my mother's friends. I said, call the police. You know, she would never leave, this, that, and the other. We then went back from Christmas break to go back to school. And, you know, I had been in constant communication with the police and the police detectives, and they would come to school and interview me, and I was constantly trying to give them more and more information. You know, this is back in the times when we really didn't have internet or Google or any of those things. So I was trying to gather as much information as I could at 11 years old, with pictures and things that I found in my father's truck and giving information. They ended up finding a house that my father had purchased in another state, in Erie, Pennsylvania. We were in Mansfield, Ohio, which is central Ohio. So Erie, Pennsylvania is about 4.5 hours away over state lines. And so about 25 days later, they dug out my mother's body underneath this home that he had purchased to live in with his then girlfriend, who was pregnant, and myself and my other sister that was adopted from China. And his girlfriend's kids. So the key, when my father was subsequently arrested, I was taken into foster care. The case went to trial. I testified for 2.5 days as the prosecution's chief witness, and my father was subsequently convicted after about, I think the trial lasted maybe 14 days. And he has been incarcerated ever since.
Well, I'm very sorry for your loss, first of all.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, and it becomes your life, and what you've done with it now, consequentially, is to, you know, share about the aftermath of this kind of really, you know, trauma that I think most people will never have to endure, but how the human, you know, spirit does, is resilient, and how you've actually, you know, continue to rise above it, and I really appreciate your courage to share your story.
Oh, thank you. Well, hopefully, you know, part of doing these types of things is to hopefully, you know, if others are in similar situations or, you know, are experiencing trauma of their own, you know, hopefully this inspires people and helps people and shows a way, you know, that is a positive way of dealing with these things, the negative ways that we as human beings tend to fall into the traps of, you know, let's say addiction or things of that nature, or self-harm and things like that, or harm to others, you know, not only ourselves, but harm to others, you know. So hopefully, you know, this helps with that.
And you've always been creative, I'm assuming. I just want, you know, I know you are a filmmaker, a cinematographer, director, editor. You've worked with music videos and media. I mean, so obviously you have a creative bone in your body. When was it that you decided to get into, like, you know, this kind of world of documentaries and focusing on this kind of, you know, way of dealing with this?
Well, growing up, I was always an artistic child. My mother was very encouraging of my artistic abilities. I was a musician and singer in high school, and I went to college for music, actually. Got a partial scholarship for voice at Ohio University and then Oberlin Conservatory. And but about 2.5 years in, I dropped out and had a desire to move to Los Angeles to try to make it in the entertainment industry. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I always wanted to be a part of the big city, and I wanted to live in a place where it was warm and where around creative, like-minded individuals and things like that. So that was always a goal of mine growing up, to be around, you know, creativity. I was fortunate enough to land in Los Angeles and worked as a model for years, and then just acting and things like that, commercial work. And then worked in music for a little while at a studio, and then that didn't really work out. So I got into filmmaking, and that has been quite successful for me. So I think we met through a director that I worked with named Jen Page, and we did a film about a year ago called The Breakout, which is about certain teenage issues and things like that.
Mental illness.
I'm sorry.
I had Chris on last week, who wrote, you know, the film, and he was fantastic. We were talking about mental illness and actually, you know, rising about the trauma of mental illness. And, you know, as a teenager, there's so many things that we go through. So it's a fantastic film, and it's available on Amazon for everybody to check out too.
Yeah. It's a good film for sure.
Yeah.
And beautifully shot, I might say.
Yeah, really. I know. Yeah.
But so getting into what I, you know, what I do, I mean, I work as a cinematographer and director, but, you know, underscoring kind of my whole creative process, growing up and developing as an artist and a young man into adulthood, you know, I always had this burning desire to take my story that I have from my life, because my way of dealing with the world and my way of catharsis is through art, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my goal was to, you know, has always been, since I stepped foot out here, even when I was a kid, I mean, I was like, I have to do something with this story.
Right.
Whether it's
right.
going to help people or help me, I mean, it would help me, but help other people, I can't just let this die with me. In 1999, I was in Los Angeles, and I saw a film called American History X, which is about the consequences. It stars Edward Norton and Edward Furlong, and it's about the consequences of violence and the ramifications of it. And I thought, you know, this is a fantastic film. I don't know whoever did this film, but I want them to do my story. Flash forward to about 8 years later, I met a gentleman named Don Morrissey through my then fiance at the time, and he was the producer of the film. So he and I became friends, and you know, I told him my story. That, you know, I really, really, really want to do something with this, mm-hmm. with my life. You know, I think that one of the things we really forget about in this country, or just in general as human beings, is, you know, we see a violent act. We know that the person, you know, is killed, and the bad guy goes to prison, and mm-hmm. the trial, and the state gets its restitution, and then we go next, and we never really see what the consequences or the impact of that violence is on community, on yeah. family members, on friends, on schoolmates, on, you know, as I said, the community at large.
The ripple effect,
We never examined that ripple effect. And that was one of the things that I really, really wanted to delve into. So my friend John said, you know, I think this is a great concept. We should do something with this. So, you know, we kicked it around for, you know, as many projects in Hollywood go, you know, it's a long, long process. So mm-hmm. we kind of, you know, scripted it out and figured out, okay, this is what we want to do. This is great. Figured out some of the stories because, you know, I've worked with this director many times. Her name is Barbara Koppel. She's won 2 Academy Awards for documentary mm-hmm. filmmaking. I think she would love this. So a few years ago, we took it to Barbara, and she said, I love this idea. Let's do it. And, you know, we shopped it around, and we got some interest, and we ended up starting, we began filming in Ohio in December of last year, December 2016.
Wow.
So, you know.
So exciting. I mean, exciting to get this out there. Yeah.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting because, you know, like I said, it's always been a dream of mine, a goal, an aspiration to really be able to do something good with this challenging circumstance in life. And
of
to be course. Able to show others that you don't have to resort to, like I said, self-harm, harm towards others, you know, addiction, those types of things, you know. Those are just self-destructive behaviors in the end. You know, they don't help anybody.
Right.
They only do more damage.
Mm-hmm.
The buck stops here. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Don't perpetuate the cycle. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard for people that don't have like support or love or tips or tools or anything that they collect along the way in terms of how to deal with the pain. And sometimes they don't see that the pain is teaching you a lesson or the pain is teaching you how resilient and strong you can be. You know, instead, you become the victim of the pain. And that, I think, leads to numbing out with, you know, drugs for a large, you know, large amount of people, alcohol, food, you know, whatever that is, and a distraction from sitting with it and transforming it into something like you have positive, you know?
Yeah. And you know, we should talk about this and we can go, it's you know, it's not easy. And
yeah.
that's not, you know, for me trying to say all this credit to myself. I mean, for example, I train at a boxing gym every morning in Hollywood. And there are people that there are a couple of clients that come in there that are in wheelchairs. And I look at them and I go, you know, I'm inspired by them, mm-hmm. coming in and exercising and helping their bodies and saying, I'm not going to be a cripple, you know,
or
let society label me as that. I'm going to be myself and own this. But I see those things and those challenges and I go, I can't even imagine. And, you know, people come to me and go, I can't even imagine. And, you know, everything is all relative to our experience. Because
very
then
true.
I've been through this mm-hmm. horrible tragedy, you know, that most people go, this would have just broke me. Like, I would have stopped myself. And I go, and it's like, well, how do you deal with it? And I said, because it's my life, you know, it's familiar to me. You know, I get it. You know, I understand. And that is my normal, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I think that when you're in, you know, there's always a saying, you know, when you're so sick in the forest, you can't see it for the trees. You know, it's when you're in it, you're in it. You just have to deal with it. You're forced to deal with the situation. And, you know, you can either deal with it or you can try to escape. But mm-hmm. the escape through these behaviors never really leads you to any respite, if you will, you know, or any solace, you know? I think that's probably a better word.
Yeah, no. I totally understand and agree. And I mean, if anybody is listening out there today that has gone through, you know, which I'm sure they have, some kind of trauma, whether it's a big trauma, little trauma, doesn't matter the size of your trauma. Do you have any tips? Do you have any kind of suggestions for people if they don't know how to get through?
Well, I mean, I think...
Did you do therapy at all? Did you reach out to a community?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I have to be honest with you. You know, I went through therapy as a child, but in my young adulthood, and through adulthood, I mean, I just started back in therapy about 2 months ago when I started the whole process of actually, when we were finally, you know, we got our budget approved and we were moving on with making the documentary. I said, you know, I gotta get myself back into some therapy.
Good for
you.
So
I don't self-destruct because I'm taking on, even though I live it day to day, I'm really taking on reliving this process again.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, as humans, we tend to react to things that we don't understand or that we're fearful of with anger. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, as a matter of fact, I think there was a page in the last couple of days in the Daily Stoic. I don't know if any, I'm sure your listeners probably read that book. But, you know, they were talking about anger, you know, and some people use that as a, you know, refer to anger as a motivator. But really, you know, anger just kind of leads to this self-fulfilling prophecy, I believe, because if you're angry, you're never really dealing with anything. You're projecting an emotion on it. You're getting angry and, life is unfair and this and that. And that tends to lay the bear trap of self-pity and victimization. You know what I mean? And
absolutely.
There's a difference between being a victim and being a victim who wants to be a victor. You know, you have to, you know, and I see it all the time. People fall victim to the self-pity and the self-loathing and all of that. And not that I haven't had my moments. We all do. We're all human. We just go, oh, God, this is so tough. Like, this sucks. You know, I can't get through this. And you find the strength within you to do that. You know, there's no real rhyme or reason on how you get through these things. You just do. You just have to drive on. You just have to have faith. I mean, not in the oh, I have to believe in a certain deity faith. Faith in yourself. Faith in every cloud does have that silver line. You are, you know, you are going to get through this. You know, I remember reading a quote on Instagram like a year ago. And it said, so far you have survived 100% of your worst days.
Yeah.
It's so true. That. We don't think about that because we go, oh, this is the worst thing ever. But then we wake up tomorrow and it's the same thing.
We
have a new day. We have a new start, you know, and living in the moment, being present. I mean, I can throw every hooey-dooey cliche at you, but it really kind of is true. You know, you have to actively make a choice to say, I'm going to get through this.
Everything you're saying though is a cognitive choice, meaning like you've worked on how you framing your thoughts, and sometimes people have to learn how to reframe or change a negative thought into a positive thought. I mean, it's all, I think, up in your head, which it sounds like you've understood how to kind of talk yourself through it, which I think is like building any muscle. I know that once some people that I've worked with change the way that they think and kind of how they could look at things differently with different lenses, then that changes their whole life. So I think it's important to figure out how that could work for you and maybe what narratives have been set that aren't serving you anymore, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, it's, you know, there's also a part of this journey where you really have to lay the foundation of forgiveness and not only, you know, forgiveness of others, you know, I had to forgive my father, you know.
Right.
I don't like my father. I don't think he's a good person at all. And he's a sociopath. He's a very sick person. But I had to forgive him because you know, several years ago, I had come out to the parole board because I had felt that he had, you know, served his time and could potentially be released from prison. Now, certain things have happened that I don't necessarily agree with that decision I made years ago. But at the same time, that was a moment of me letting go and forgiving. And there was a person that said to me at the time, I don't understand how you can do that. How can you forgive him for doing, look what he did to your family and your life and your mother? I said, hold on, brother. This isn't about, you're getting it all wrong. This isn't about him. This is about me. Right. This is about me saying, right, I'm going to move on. I'm going to say, this happened. I'm moving on. I'm letting go. I'm going to live in the moment, and I'm going to let go of this, because he's already done the damage. He's done the damage to me, the family, to himself. He lives in a 6x8 concrete, box. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's done. He's done the damage to himself. That should not be something that I carry. And you have to go through that process of forgiving, not only him, but I had to forgive my mother. I had to say I forgive her for placing herself in a situation where her life was taken from her and putting me in jeopardy, instead of just packing a bag and running, And because she knew the monster. I didn't know the monster. I was too young to understand the monster. So there's that process too. But, and then forgiving myself for having those feelings, because my mother is a victim, but also having those feelings of, that there's nothing I could do to change the circumstance, because I went through that. I could have saved her. I could have, I could have changed things if I had only done this and that. And I was 11 years old.
It's unchangeable past. It's not about, it's not about also freeing him of his crime, but it's like not holding it against you and not, holding yourself captor to the unchangeable past, you can't change it.
Precisely. And that, I think, is something that, it's a trap that's laid bare before us when we're in these situations, is hanging on to the past and not moving forward and not being present and not embracing it. Because, it's easy for me to say in a lot of ways, because I, as an artist, have a very readily and handy form of catharsis available to me. I can speak through art. I was fortunate enough to actually do something with my story and tell my story, have that opportunity, which is amazing. It was an
amazing.
For years and years and years, up and down, as anything, any project in Hollywood takes, but being able to do something with it was a major coup. I mean, I can't tell you, when we got done filming at the end of December, I was in my adopted parents' kitchen, and I was getting a soda out of the refrigerator or something, and I just fell to the floor. I just started sobbing. It's just like the weight, the weight is just, when you're in it, you don't realize it. Like, you don't see the forest for the trees, but once you take a step back, you go, I just can't believe I just came through with it. I think there's a quote that says, when you enter the storm, you're not the same person. When you come out of the storm, you're not the same person that entered the storm. And that's the purpose of the storm.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sounds very healing. Yeah. In
it's
a way.
The journey.
But that's life. The journey of it all is where the meat of it is, the healing of it is, the processing of it, not confronting things and not, kind of resisting life or resisting confronting sometimes what we're dealing with is not really going to be helpful. We have to kind of look at it and try to see it in, different ways. And I think it's an ongoing journey. It's never ending.
And that's the beauty of it, is that you have to embrace that. You have to go through, I have friends that are, that are former addicts that talk about, we discuss these things, as well. And they talk about, they're in the perils of their self-destruction and drug and alcohol abuse, that they're just, their journey was so, they just thought they would never make it. And all of a sudden they, 2 years sober, they're just like, I wouldn't even recognize the person that I was 2 years ago.
Absolutely.
That guy walked in and hit me in the face. I wouldn't know that person. I can't believe that I came through this. So it's everyone's, journey, whether it's violence or self-harm or injury or things like that, it's all the same. It's all trauma. And again, with doing a piece like this is to examine those things, because, the trauma is something, if you get really, really sucked into it, it becomes a sort of sense of comfort for you. And you put, I've even noticed in myself, through the course of, let's say, just relationships with women, right? Where I'll put myself in situations and they might be less than ideal, but because over the years, I was always looking for that love that I didn't have, or mm-hmm. I had that, you know, I was abandoned. So the familiarity of putting myself in a relationship that's rocky and I might be abandoned, as bad as it might sound, it had a sort of comfort to it.
Was familiar.
It had a familiarity to it. Exactly. And when you come to, you know, sharpen your tools and you come to realize these things that you're doing, you go, hold on, this isn't a healthy way to live. And then you understand why you're doing these things, why you're laying these roadblocks before you, whether personally or professionally or emotionally, you start to recognize these things and go, oh, this is why this happens. And when you reach that point, that moment of clarity is when you can really start to change the direction of your life.
And your identity because of that clarity. Well, Collier, I could talk to you for hours, but I want to make sure I tell everybody where to find you. You know, it's been such a pleasure and an honor to have you on today. Can you give everybody your website and where they could find you quick?
Sure. My website is collierlandry.com. That's www.collierlandry.com. Collierlandry.com. And all my social media is at Collier Landry. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Collier Landry.
Fantastic. And I cannot wait to see Aftermath. And I wish you the best of luck with everything and hope to keep in touch and have you on again.
Thank you so much, Erica. I look forward to it.
Thank you. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman. Thank you all for joining us today, and stay well.